You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. On this program, we talk about all things law enforcement, and you get the perspective from law enforcement. We have a great guest for you waiting in the interview room, but let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. This week, an incident happened that will reverberate throughout the law enforcement community and our country for years to come. I am referring to an incident that happened in New York City just days ago. Actually, there were two incidents, and they were connected in the blatant disrespect and the danger that law enforcement officers face every single day. In case you haven't followed this story or seen the videos, I'm going to explain it to you and then explain the ramifications as we are going to face this issue for many, many years to come. Two incidents happened in New York City that were videotaped by the usual cadre of seekers of 15 minutes of social media fame. Both were attacks on New York City police officers. In one, the officers were trying to make an arrest, and they were basically interfered with to the point where people were attacking them, throwing things at them, throwing objects at them. And in the other, these two young officers had responded to an unruly mob call, and they were unruly, okay? They basically attacked these two police officers and doused them with buckets of water. And in this fairly short video, maybe 25, 30 seconds, the officers are seen not defending themselves against these attacks. In essence, a mob of people were in the area. Individuals started throwing water at them and objects. One comes up behind one of the officers who did nothing as the suspect literally took a bucket of water, poured it right on his head, and dropped the bucket on his head, basically threw the bucket at him. These two young officers, one had a year on, one had maybe 3 years on, did absolutely nothing. They didn't defend themselves. They didn't go to take the individuals into custody. They simply walked away. And I got to tell you, from being a 34-year police veteran, watching these two officers basically just surrender and walk away without taking any enforcement action whatsoever was something I don't think I've ever seen before. I don't think I've ever seen officers just turn tail and walk away from a physical attack. See, I come from a different time, a different era, where if you put your hands on a police officer, you were going to go to jail. And there were no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And the police were going to use whatever force was necessary to take you to jail. This is what I expect of law enforcement. And to see something of this nature, where the officers just did nothing and allowed themselves to be attacked and take no enforcement action, was something that I believe is a humiliation, not just for the NYPD, not just for these officers, but for the entire law enforcement community. Now, there's a lot to talk about with this story, and I'm going to go in depth. First of all, I cannot bring myself to believe that those two officers were afraid of confronting these punks and using the force necessary to take them into custody. I don't believe that. I can't believe that. But what I can believe and do believe is that they, like many other police officers across this nation, in New York, in San Francisco, in San Diego, in Seattle, in Portland, in many states across this country. They were more afraid of their own police administrations, of their own city administrations, of the media, of social media, and all of the cruelty and misjudgment that comes from being exposed when you use force this day and age. You see, depolicing is taking place all over the nation. Cops are afraid to do their jobs. And that is a new reality. This is a reality that should not be, but has become, because officers want to survive. And I'm not talking about the physical survival. I'm talking about the survival of their careers, because we have seen, since the days of Ferguson, when police officer Darren Wilson was forced to shoot and kill an individual who attacked him, and was, even though he was ruled to have been completely in the right when he did it, is still in hiding to this day. As you know, Darren Wilson was the officer involved in the Ferguson shooting of Michael Brown. Michael Brown was a criminal who had just done a robbery. He was a very large man. When Officer Darren Wilson went to stop him and another individual, because of the description of the robbers and his proximity to the scene, he was attacked by Michael Brown. During that attack, Michael Brown tried to wrest the gun that Darren Wilson had as his sidearm from him. And during that struggle inside the patrol car, when Michael Brown was leaning into the car trying to take that weapon, Darren Wilson, the gun went off and shot Michael Brown in the hand. Well, Michael Brown, instead of then complying with the officer when he was placed under arrest, charged the officer. The officer fired, saving himself and killing Michael Brown. What took place in the next few days was something that will always be a watershed moment in law enforcement history. The Ferguson Police Department, a smaller agency in Missouri, was ill-equipped. And I mean that both as far as police equipment and structure to deal with a civil disobedience situation. And it escalated to the point where there were riots, there were shootings, there were looting, the town burned, all in the name of justice for Michael Brown, on the greatest lie ever perpetuated on the American public in regards to law enforcement, the lie of hands up, don't shoot. Within hours of the shooting, one of the individuals who was with Michael Brown, a quote witness unquote, came out with the story that Michael Brown has hands up and was yelling, hands up, don't shoot. And Officer Wilson executed Michael Brown. That was the story that came out. Now, anyone in law enforcement who heard that story, including me, instantaneously said to themselves, I'm not buying it. But the American public was literally inundated with hundreds of news reports where the phrase hands up, don't shoot, white police officer hunting down innocent black man. And this lie continues to this very day. That moment in time changed law enforcement, because law enforcement was characterized and is still being characterized as a racist profession, even though, of course, we have black officers, white officers, Asian officers, Hispanic officers, transgender officers, gay officers, and every other microcosm of the American public. But that narrative doesn't fit with what many in the political environment or the environment of the media want. Remember, that was when the Black Lives Matter movement began. It was began by three females from the Bay Area, true believers in socialism and communism, whose goal was to tear down the American criminal justice system. They didn't make any bones about it. If anybody wants to do the research, they came out and said it. They wanted to dismantle the American law enforcement system. They wanted police to be done away with. They wanted prisons to be done away with. And as ridiculous as that sounds, they have been able to achieve some incredible goals. Look at the disarray that we are now finding ourselves in law enforcement and in this country. What took place in New York is a microcosm of that disarray. Police officers now afraid to even defend themselves from a physical attack. That is where we have come. This was born from the ashes of Ferguson and continues to this day. What these officers went through was a true humiliation. And what officers around this nation are now dealing with is trying to determine how are they going to negotiate this treacherous road of political correctness, of policymakers in high positions of city government and law enforcement acquiescing to the pressures of social media, and those social justice, quote, warriors, unquote. In addition to this, you add the incredible situations in many of our American cities, Philadelphia, Harris County, which is Houston, places like Baltimore, Chicago, where you have district attorneys who have been elected on the platform of depolicing. When I say depolicing, I mean them failing to prosecute for criminal activity, not by the police, but by the criminals. You have an entire system now. Our criminal justice system has been perverted by individual prosecutors in power in many states all over the country. How are police officers supposed to believe in safety of themselves, their own safety, as it is related to uses of force, if their own district attorneys, who are the ones who are empowered with finding whether or not police officers are utilizing force properly, how are they to have any confidence in this system, knowing that district attorneys that have the ability to put them in jail are anti-law enforcement? The system has become perverted by within. And this is something that law enforcement all over this country is now trying to deal with. When did it become okay to physically attack and endanger a police officer and think that you have no accountability for it? When did this happen? Well, it's been encroaching ever since the days of Ferguson. We have seen this rear its ugly head time after time after time. And yet, when a police officer does what they are supposed to do and uses force, and somebody takes a handheld video of it and launches it on social media, who gets criticized immediately? Who gets vilified in the media? It's the law enforcement officer. And then you ask yourself this, why the hell would anybody want to become a cop? And the reality is this, that fewer and fewer and fewer people are making the decision to make law enforcement a career. And what does that do? That endangers the American public even more. So in essence, my friends, it sickens me to say this, but the original topics that Black Lives Matter and their other minions were trying to accomplish in great many ways have been accomplished. Police are afraid to do their jobs. People aren't getting prosecuted for crimes. State legislatures are dumping people out on the street who should have been in prison. They're changing the laws to make no one accountable for criminal activity. Who's going to pay the price? The police are going to pay the price, for sure. They're the ones on the front line. Those are the ones we expect are going to protect us. Those are the ones that we believe are the frontline warriors in the war on crime. If those warriors decide it's not worth it anymore, you're going to see chaos in this country that is something we have never seen before. And I guarantee you this, there are people that want that to happen. The enemies of this country, both from without and from within, are counting on the breakdown of law enforcement. Because without police, this country ceases to exist. The chaos, the crime, would eat us from within. It's time for the police to take over the streets, take back the streets, to let people know, the criminal environment, to know they're not going to take it anymore. That they're going to do what is necessary to defend themselves, to defend the people of this land. And without this, we're doomed. If you think that's dramatic, look at what's happening in some of the major cities where police are so understaffed and so overwhelmed that you can call 911 and not get a response for hours because people aren't joining the department anymore. Because qualified people are not taking the job. And why should they? Why should they risk not only their lives, but their families' lives, but their emotional health, but their physical health? For what? The pay that they're getting paid? The average cop makes less than $50,000 a year. They work weekends. They work nights. They work graveyard shift. They have to work overtime to put food on the table many times. And then they get lambasted when they try to even defend themselves. Well, this has become perverted. And if we don't recognize this as a nation, if we don't recognize this as citizens, and start saying we've had enough, that the cops deserve to be treated like human beings with respect, with dignity, and we will back them when they have to use force, whether it be deadly force or physical force. Time's come to recognize that without the police, without our law enforcement, this country would not be worth living in. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that that you need a deodorizer for. This stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service Sacrifice Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store. With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is Katie Daugherty. Katie is the assistant program director for an organization that is assisting not only law enforcement officers, but veterans as well, deal with post-traumatic stress. The organization is called My Battle Within. And I'm really happy to have you on the program today, Katie. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Randy.
So let's go back to this the name. I love the name, My Battle Within. How did you guys choose that name, and how did the organization begin?
Well, the name was chosen from people within the community. We put it out to a vote, and that was the name that kind of stuck. Everybody liked. The organization was founded by two veterans who were kind of battle buddies overseas, and they realized their own struggles with PTSD and ended up coming up with Revenant Journey, which is what we put out there.
Say that again. It came out with what?
They came up with a Revenant Journey, which is what we refer to going through the program. It symbolizes a person who has returned from the dead, which is kind of what we revolve around, because sometimes we find ourselves in a place where we're numb, and we try to help the participants coming through. We try to help them find a place in life where they're no longer numb.
Interesting. Okay, so this was started by two veterans. Who are they? Who are these two veterans?
Adam Majors and Jay Waldo.
And they served in what capacity?
They were both in the Army, and I'm not 100% sure of what their MOS was, but I do know they were both combat veterans.
And what were the backgrounds of these two gentlemen? That do you know how long they served and what their experience was with PTSD themselves?
You know, I don't want to misquote them. I'm not sure what their service length was, but I do know they were just plain old Mo and Joe. But I do know Adam has gone on to seek a degree in psychology and is doing wonderful things there.
Okay, so they're the ones that gave birth to this organization. How long ago was that?
The organization has been through several different names. The Battle Within is actually just a year old. However, our community is several years old. It has been around for a while, but the Battle Within itself has just been around for a little over a year.
So tell me about the organization. Tell me what it does and how does it assist?
They can go on our website and apply. It can be veterans, first responders, which includes nurses, dispatchers, really anyone who has a servant role in the community. But we focus on a holistic approach to healing symptoms of PTSD. What that looks like is mindfulness, meditation, teaching unconditional positive regards, which is really what that is listening without fixing. It's just being present and being there. In our line of work, we tend to want to fix things. But we focus on just being there, being present, and being non-judgmental, which I think is a very, very important thing. We also teach yoga, nutrition. We do a lot of soul work and healing work. We build trust. Our groups of participants that come through is usually it's about 10 to 12 participants. So we keep the groups small. That way we can really bond and build those trusts.
This kind of program, first of all, how long is the program itself?
It's 5 days.
It's 5 days. And explain to me, okay, I contact your organization, My Battle Within. I say, I'm having some issues. I think I would like to participate in your program. Walk me through the steps of how it happens. And then the experience itself.
If you just go on there and apply, we'll reach out to you and let you know that you got into that class. Because when you apply, you pick which class you want to be in that we already have set dates for. And we'll reach out to you. We give you a packing list and tell you what to expect. Now, there are some things we don't tell you ahead of time because that's kind of part of the program. We don't want you to bring weapons. You know, a lot of people are struggling that come through the program. So we have a safe place for you to keep those if that's what you choose to do. And we walk you through every step throughout the week. You're led by mentors, which are people who have been through the program. There's also providers there who are our counselors and therapists. And then once the program's done, you are in a community of people who care about you and who have also been through the program and understand.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So there's ongoing peer support as when you graduate from your 5 days, you experience that, you bond with those people that you are, that you are sharing this experience with, and then they basically stay in your life as support.
And as much as you want them to be, absolutely.
When you say that there are 10 to 12 participants, where is this held? Is this a camp? Is this a hotel? How does it function?
Currently it's held at a church camp, here locally in Kansas City. It's actually located just outside of Kansas City in Parkville. Right now it's held at that church camp, which is kind of an outdoorsy, kind of scene.
So it's in a, camp that's also used for other adventures, so to speak. So how many staff members are there? You got 10 or 12 people. How many people are actually, operating as mentors and counselors?
That varies from about 3 to 5 mentors who are, like I said, alumni, and those people come and volunteer their time for all 5 days. And really, that is the heart of the week, is mentor-led, making sure everybody's in the right place at the right time, making sure all the behind-the-scenes stuff is done. It's quite amazing to watch someone come through the program and then come back as a mentor and give back to a program that has given them so much.
All right, so I've heard of similar programs around the country that are peer-driven. Mm-hmm. What's the ratio, do you think, as far as law enforcement as opposed to veterans? What's your average group look like?
That is a fantastic question. Really, there's not an average. There's a lot of groups that come through where there's, maybe 5 veterans and the rest are scattered between law enforcement, which is dispatch and cops, and then you have firefighters, paramedics. And then there's some classes that are heavy on the police side and light on the veteran side. So it really, there's no average. There has been a few classes where we've had some civilians come through, and that may be someone who serves in the community. I know there has been some police wives come through, which is fantastic because, it might give them a little better understanding of the struggles. And as we all know, PTS can be transferable. Our loved ones are the ones that suffer the worst.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. So this is open to spouses as well. And I think that's one of that's something really important. When we talk about post-traumatic stress, the focus is usually on the individual who is, experiencing the symptoms. It's usually the officer or the first responder or the veteran, but it's a very pervasive issue in that the entire family is affected by it. And so I think that it's fantastic that you open this up to wives. Has there ever been families that attend this?
We don't encourage them to come through together. Because we share things as a group that is very confidential, and we keep that confidential within the organization. However, we've had families come through for their own classes. I know there's been a dispatcher come through, and then her husband went through during a different class, which we separate males and females. And then, maybe their adult child came through. They usually all come through in their own class. We did have two sisters come through during one class, which actually really worked out really well. We just want to make sure that we create a safe place for sharing. And a lot of times when you have loved ones come through at the same time, you don't feel okay to share stuff that you might share when it's just you and, you know, a group of people you really don't know that well yet.
That makes a great deal of sense. Yes, absolutely. Because, yeah, I didn't think about that, and you're absolutely right that that's true. How many people do you think have experienced the classes at this point? You've been operating under this name for about a year, but you were operating under previous names. What were the alliterations before it was this particular one?
How many people have gone through before it was the Battle Within?
Your total since you guys have had several alliterations, but the concept has been the same, correct?
It's been, yes, very, very similar. We've changed a few things. We now incorporate equine therapy as well. I forgot to mention that earlier. Our community, which is created of not only the Battle Within alumni, but other alumni that have gone through the other programs that are all have the same heart and soul. Our community, if I had to guess, I don't know what the exact number is probably between 300 and 500 people.
Oh, that's making a very significant impact on the community.
And those are people from all across the United States, and like I said, quite a mixture of law enforcement, first responders, and veterans. You know, and like I said, that includes the nurses, dispatchers, a nice mixture. Which I think is important because we tend to flock to our own people. And when we get in a small group that has that mixture, it's nice to see, okay, they're struggling too, and they're not a cop.
Right, right.
And I can relate to that. They can relate to me.
So tell me about your background.
I've been in law enforcement for 11 years, divorced twice. And I truly believe, after going through this program myself, that had I had some of the tools that I learned through the program, you know, during my marriages, I probably wouldn't have had the failed marriages. And
that's a big statement. That's a big statement.
This program, hands down, absolutely saved my life. During my last divorce, found myself finding comfort at the bottom of a bottle. And obviously, we all know that's not good. You know, I was just doing those self-destructive things that we always see when we go on calls. You know, we see people getting drunk, trying to numb the pain of whatever trauma they're going through. And I found myself there and hating who I was, not being able to look myself in the eyes in the mirror. And this program really brought me some peace and gave me tools to work through some of that trauma. I mean, you're not healed at the end of the 5 days, but you have so many tools and you have so many brothers in the community to reach out to and go, hey, I'm not okay and I need to talk to somebody. And they know how to be there and listen and just help. That way you know you're not alone.
I think, you know, the feeling of isolation that post-traumatic stress incurs in us is one of the most devastating aspects of the issue. And the interesting thing is that we all feel like that no one else could possibly feel this way. You know, when you're in the depths of a depression that is related to post-traumatic stress, you feel very isolated. You feel like no one can understand what you're going through. And so a program like this exposes to the participants that you're not alone. And this is a huge comfort to people.
Huge. And, you know, we tend to think, oh, well, this isn't as bad as, you know, Joe Blow over here who just lost his child when I'm struggling with something that seems so minute compared to that. You know, we all minimize our own trauma, especially those of us in this line of work, you know, any kind of servants line of work, right? So we all minimize our own trauma. And so in our heads, we're minimizing, we're just pushing it down. That's all we're doing. We're pushing it down. We want you to deal with it in a positive way instead of a destructive way, like I did at the bottom of a bottle.
So I'm guessing, consider this a wild guess, that during this 5 days, there's no alcohol allowed.
Correct.
Because otherwise, I can see a lot of alcohol being consumed around the campfire. That's the
oh,
vision that
right.
I get.
right. Yeah.
So what is give me a day in the life of a participant. You know, you sign in. Is it like a barracks kind of deal, or do you get private rooms? How does that work?
We have rooms. I mean, if you can just imagine like an old cabin with several rooms in it, there's bunk beds. Some rooms have two sets of bunk beds. Some have three or four. We like people to share rooms. We discourage having your own room, and privacy is huge. However, this 5 days is to build those relationships and the sisterhood and brotherhood and having people that when you leave on Friday, you can reach out to. And our belief is that if you're rooming with these people, then you're going to bond even further with them.
Yeah, I see that. Absolutely. Okay. So, yeah. So I sign in, we all get together, you assign us our rooms, and then the next morning, what happens?
You actually arrive on Monday, and you'll be met in the parking lot by one of the mentors that you're with all week, and we'll take you up to where your room is. You actually get to pick your room, get to pick your bunk, and then we kind of give you instructions on where to go and what we need you to do. Obviously, there's always having to fill out paperwork and sign stuff in the beginning of anything you do. And then we go from there. We jump into classroom stuff. And you ask what a day in the life looks like. Really, day one is the most stressful. And I can tell you my day one, I didn't know whether or not I wanted to be there. A lot of people are like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be here. But if
a little buyer's remorse, so to speak?
Yeah, and it's hard, you know. And we're always the ones helping others. And whenever we reach out for help ourselves, that is so hard. And I think if you just trust yourself, trust the people who have been through the program, who are there as your mentors, and just really lean into the program, you're going to take away – everybody has their own experiences, but everybody's going to take away something, and that's our goal. And by Wednesday, I promise you, if you're not wanting to stay by Wednesday, come talk to me.
So you're that confident that once you're in it.
I'm very confident.
Okay.
Yeah. But Monday's the hardest. First day's the hardest.
I don't want to say class because it's not really a class per se, but How do you organize this group of folks so that it is they're each getting attention and their issues are being brought out on the table? I mean, you're sharing some really heavy stuff here. Is that all done in a group setting?
Yes, it is. Now there are providers available if you need some one-on-one time. But yeah, most everything is done in a group setting. You even find participants like not going off by themselves to eat, and they want to stay as a group because they're bonding. We have activities created to help with that bonding process. And, whenever you find yourself bonded to a group of people, that's when you share. And when you share your story, you never know whose story, who else's story that's going to unlock, if I share my story with someone, they may go, oh my gosh, I can relate to that. And that helps me so much knowing someone else is there too, because I thought I was alone.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I would imagine that every one of these sessions is unique unto itself, because, you know, although the symptoms of post-traumatic stress may be common, everybody experiences.
Yeah, everybody handles trauma differently.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So one of the questions that I have is, tell me one of the success stories that you have experienced. I know you've experienced it yourself, but
I have.
But tell me about some of the others that you know of that really achieved some peace by going through the program.
You know, everybody experiences it differently. For me personally, I got done on Friday and mowed my grass on Saturday. And I found myself mowing my grass and crying. But I wasn't crying sad tears. I was crying because I was smelling fresh grass for the first time, and I don't know how long. I didn't know I wasn't smelling it. You know, another guy talks about coming out of one of our outside activities, and you come out of this clearing, and he talks about looking up and just seeing vibrant colors.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Huge. Yeah. So if you suppress feelings, you can't suppress the anger and hurt without suppressing love and joy, right? So whenever you let go of some of that, you're gaining some of the good back. So in letting go of some of that anger, you may be gaining that love and joy back, which is, you know, maybe where that vibrant color comes from, or taste or smell, like it did for me.
Yeah, that's fascinating. In the film that we did for The Wounded Blue, called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed, one of the officers who we featured in this had been shot accidentally by his sergeant and is, you know, suffering greatly from post-traumatic stress. And he described it really well as he said, I feel like my life is a black and white movie, that I've lost the vibrancy, I've lost the colors. And so what you just related, I think, is really important. And one of those things that, you know, you may not even think about when you're thinking about post-traumatic stress, but that's really it in a nutshell. You close down. You don't experience joy. You don't experience a lot of the things that make life worth living. And so to be able to give that back to people is a huge gift.
Huge, which is why we have so many people wanting to come back and be mentors, because they had such a great experience themselves. We've had to have interviews, set up interviews, and essentially turn people away, because so many people are saying, oh my gosh, this program really worked for me. I want to give back and be a part of something so much bigger than myself, and help others find this peace. And so we've had to set up an interview for mentors and pick from interviews on who we're going to put in as mentors. So we try to rotate them. So
that's
give everybody
a good problem to have. That's a good problem to have.
Oh, absolutely. It's a good problem to have. Yeah.
So, and this is available for law enforcement, for veterans all over the country, correct?
Yep, first responders, veterans. We include nurses and dispatchers in that.
Is there any cost involved?
Yeah, no cost at all. We are based on fundraisers that we do. It costs about $2,000 per person to send somebody through the program. We do a lot of fundraising throughout the year, and you know, we ask for donations. If anybody would want to donate, you can do that on our website at mybattlewithin.org. But no, it's absolutely free to that first responder or veteran coming through the program. It's absolutely free. All they have to do is show up, which is the hardest part.
So they have to make sure that they get there. They take care of the transportation, and the rest of it is free.
Correct.
Right. So how do people find you? How does someone want to, that wants to apply to attend this program? How do they do it?
Just go to mybattlewithin.org.
Mybattlewithin.org. And that's where you'll find the application process. That's where you'll find the information about your organization.
Yep.
Well, this is one of those things that, is, I think, cutting edge when it comes down to post-traumatic stress. Everybody deals with it differently. Same thing with therapists when you're dealing with post-traumatic stress. The first therapist that you deal with may not be the one for you. An experience like this may circumvent the need for going to a psychologist or going to therapy, because in essence, this is a treatment for post-traumatic stress.
Right. And we don't discourage going and seeking counseling. However, I found myself after going through this program, understanding myself better. And instead of going, oh, well, that therapist doesn't know anything about law enforcement, they don't get me, I understand myself better now, so I can convey what I'm trying to say in a better way, with a therapist who maybe doesn't know anything about law enforcement. So,
and that's often a problem. That's often a problem with feeling connected to the therapist that you go to. If there isn't a trust developed, it's almost a waste of time. So we've both experienced that. All right, so we're running low on time, Katie. But once again, the website, in order to get information for your organization and also to gain an application, is what?
It is mybattlewithin.org.
Mybattlewithin.org. So you're open. Is there a long waiting list to get into a class?
There's not. Once the classes fill up, when you go on to apply, you can select which class. And once that class is full, it won't be an option in there. So if the class is full, it won't be an option for you to select it. And right now, our fall classes are up on the website. So
how often do you run the program?
We run it 1 to 2 times a month in the spring and in the fall. We take the summer off because the church camp that we use is being used for that as the church camp. So, it varies on how many classes we run. We ran 4 classes last fall. We have more classes this fall.
Okay, so mybattlewithin.org, that's the organization's name. Katie, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, discussing what I think is a really, really worthwhile program, and I applaud you for your own sacrifices for the profession that you love so much and for what you're doing.
Thanks, Randy. I appreciate it.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
On Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, each week we honor those men and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have one name to read, Deputy Sheriff Benjamin Nimtz of the Broward County Sheriff's Office in Florida. Deputy Sheriff Benjamin Nimtz was killed in a vehicle crash at the intersection of South Military Trail and Southwest 10th Street while responding to a domestic violence call at 3 a.m. His patrol car collided with a pickup truck in the intersection. He was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. Deputy Nimtz had served with the Broward County Sheriff's Office for only 16 months. He is survived by his wife and two sons. Deputy Sheriff Benjamin Nimtz, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Florida. End of watch. Sunday, July 21st, 2019. May he rest in peace. I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We try to bring you the truth about the American law enforcement officer and the stories that are written and reported about them. I also would love for you to come onto Facebook and look me up under the Voice of American Law Enforcement. Like me, follow me. And if you haven't, please check out the website that goes along with our organization, The Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. This is a charitable organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And if you haven't seen our film, go to either iTunes or Amazon or the Microsoft Store and look up The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week right here on the Voice of American Law Enforcement.